Imagine this. You wake up to the sound of an engine being run up. It is not a sound that should alarm you, but in this particular campsite it takes you half a second to remember where you are. You unzip the tent, you put your feet in the dew-wet grass, and you look left, a 1940 Taylorcraft on a morning run-up check. You look right, an Eronka Champ with a hand-painted number on the tail, tied down 6 feet from your sleeping bag. Straight ahead, the Iowa sky is going gold and pink, and somewhere out there a radial engine just came to life, and the sound is rolling across the flat ground like something the morning decided to say. You are in Blakesburg, Iowa. You are at Antique Airfield, and I'm telling you right now, there is no better way to start a day on this planet. I'm Ramp. This is Ramped Check on Radio Hangar. And today I am taking you to the fly-in campground that I believe every pilot in this country should experience at least once in their life. Maybe twice. Maybe every single August until the wheels stop turning. Before I go further, today's segment is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins for every step of the journey. First solo, private pilot, instrument all the way up. Mark the milestones that matter. Every coin tells a story. AviationSoul.com now. Blakesburg. If you have been flying for any length of time and you have spent any time talking to people who fly antique aircraft, you have heard the name Antique Airfield. Identifier Iowa 27, sitting in the rolling farm country of southern Iowa. This is the home field of the Antique Airplane Association and the site of their annual fly-in, which has been running continuously for decades and which I am convinced is one of the most genuinely meaningful events in American aviation. The people who go to Blakesburg know about Blakesburg. They go back every year. Some of them have been going back for 20 years, 30 years. They fly the same airplane they have always flown. They camp in the same general area. They eat at the same potluck table with the same people who flew in from the same states they have always flown in from. This event is a tradition in the truest sense of that word, not a ritual that continues out of habit, but one that continues because it is genuinely worth continuing. Let me set the scene for the flight in. You are going to cross a lot of Iowa farmland from 1,500 feet. Southern Iowa is an extraordinary quilt of greens and golds, section lines and drainage ditches, farmsteads and grain elevators standing up from the flat ground like punctuation. There is a spare beauty to it if you give it a chance. But I will be honest with you, the arrival at Iowa 27 requires you to be paying attention. The strip is grass, it is short. Call it around 2,500 feet, oriented roughly northeast to southwest. Set between fields, there is no tower, there is no automated weather. You are calling your position on the common traffic advisory frequency, and you are fitting yourself into a pattern that may include a Piper J3 Cub, a Howard DGA, a Stinson Reliant, and a Porterfield, all doing their own thing at their own speed simultaneously, and every one of them is being flown by someone who knows that aircraft intimately, who has been landing it on grass for decades, who is not stressed about it in the slightest. The grass is well maintained. The field management takes serious pride in it, but it is not concrete. And if there has been rain in the days before you arrive, you need to know about it. Check your pyreps, check the NOTAMs, because arriving with a plan is always better than improvising in front of an audience of people who will study your technique from their camp chairs with great interest and no malice whatsoever. When you roll out and a volunteer in a bright orange vest waves you into your tie-down spot, the event begins.
Because the person parked next to you is going to come over and look at your airplane, not intrusively, not critically, with the quiet appreciation of someone who understands what it means to care for a machine, to make the trip in a machine, to trust a machine with your body above the earth. There is a handshake, there is a where did you come from, there is a brief but sincere look at whatever you flew in on, and then you're looking at theirs. And then somehow 20 minutes have passed, and you already know about a restoration that is going to take 2 more winters, and an oil cooler that was back-ordered for 6 months, and a carburetor rebuild that the owner wants to walk you through in detail if you have a few minutes. I am not kidding. This is how Blakesburg works, and you are going to love it. The camping is right on the field, directly adjacent to the tie-down rows. You pitch your tent, you stake your ground lines, you set up your camp chair and your folding table and your little cooler, and you're about 15 feet from your propeller for the duration of the event. This is the whole point. This is not a campground that happens to be near an airfield. This is an airfield that has a campground growing naturally out of the culture of the people who fly there.
The two things are not separate. Your home base and your camp are the same location. By the first evening, the ramp becomes something else entirely. People string lights between the wings and struts of their aircraft. Extension cords make their quiet way across the grass to power a lantern here, a phone charger there. The conversations that started during the afternoon walk through the rows continue over folding tables as the temperature drops and the Iowa stars come out. And let me tell you something about the Iowa stars. You're a long way from city light out here. The sky earns your attention.
Somebody always has a camp stove running. Somebody always has food they did not plan to share, but will share, because that is how this particular community operates. You do not go hungry at Blakesburg. You do not go lonely at Blakesburg. The social fabric of this event is woven out of small moments, and it is one of the most genuine things I have encountered in aviation, and I have been to a lot of places. The potluck dinner on Saturday evening is the centerpiece of the social calendar, and it has its own gravitational pull. Pilots bring food from wherever they came from. There is smoked brisket from Texas, baked in a trailer-mounted rig that made the trip behind a truck. There are casseroles from Missouri. There is a potato salad that someone's grandmother taught them to make in 1964, and they have made it for this event every single year they have been coming. The table is long, and it does not follow a recipe. It follows a tradition. You eat outside as the sun goes down over the Iowa fields, and the conversation wanders between airplanes and families and jobs and the approaches that went sideways and the moments that went exactly right, and everybody is comfortable with all of it, because the people at that table understand each other in a way that requires no explanation. You found this event. You made the trip. That already tells the people around you quite a bit. Now let me tell you about the aircraft, because I have been building to this. The Antique Airplane Association defines antique as aircraft manufactured in 1945 or earlier, classic is 1946 through 1955, and then there is a contemporary category. I will be honest with you, nobody at Blakesburg is especially fired up about the contemporary category. The hearts here belong to the old machines, the ones built when an aircraft was a collection of wood and fabric and wire, and somebody's best engineering effort translated through their hands into something that could leave the ground. The diversity on the ramp is staggering once you start walking the rows.
Eronka Champs and Eronka Chiefs, sitting side by side, showing you the evolutionary gap between them in real time. Luscombe Silvairs, with their all-metal construction, standing apart from the fabric-covered tailorcraft. Fairchild 24s, with their distinctive cowling. Piper J3 Cubs in their original yellow, which I am convinced is the most correct colour anything has ever been painted, travel airs, that make everyone stop walking and just stare, because they look like something a painter invented and then someone decided to actually build Sturmans, early Cessnas, Stinson Reliants, Howard DGAs, built for the business travel of a completely different era, with their Art Deco lines and their sense that speed was once a luxury item. You have to see this, and they fly them. This is critically important. These are not static displays, these are not museum pieces behind velvet ropes. Every morning of the fly-in, the ramp comes alive in a way that is hard to describe with language that does it justice. Engines start. Pilots do their run-ups in the grass. Aircraft taxi out one after another. And the sound changes depending on what power plant you are hearing. The flat authority of a small four-cylinder, the rumbly confidence of a Continental, and then the occasional radial, which sounds like aviation deciding to be completely unambiguous about itself. Formation flights happen in the morning, low passes happen in the afternoon, three Sturmans coming down the runway at about 50 feet in loose echelon formation, is an experience that gets embedded in your nervous system in a way that regular life simply does not replicate. I talked to a man named Walt who had flown in from Missouri in a tailorcraft from 1946. He had owned that airplane for 31 years. The fabric on the wings was the third set he had put on himself. He could describe the history of every repair and every modification in that airframe from memory, completely unprompted. When he walked me through the pre-flight he was doing purely out of habit, he talked about the aircraft the way some people talk about their family home, with affection and specific knowledge and a clear sense of responsibility that was not a burden.
I watched a woman named Helen pre-flight, a 1938, a Eronka chief, with the same careful attention most of us give to aircraft that cost 20 times as much. She had owned it for 19 years. She rebuilt the engine with her father, who had learned to fly in an aircraft of the same type in 1952.
She keeps a photograph in the cockpit. Him, young, standing in front of a champ, squinting into the sun. She flies that airplane for both of them now. These are the stories that Blakesburg gives you. Every row has them. You just have to ask. The Air Power Museum is right there on the field, and it deserves a dedicated hour of your time. Minimum. The collection covers aviation history in a way that feels personal rather than institutional. There are aircraft in that building that went directly from active service to preservation without a long detour through neglect. And the context the museum provides ties the machines to the people who flew them and the times in which they flew. The volunteers who run it have deep knowledge and genuine enthusiasm, and they will tell you things about those aircraft that you will not find in any reference publication, because some of that knowledge lives only in the people. I want to take a moment here and say something about why places like Blakesburg matter that goes beyond the aircraft and the food and the grass strip. Oshkosh is extraordinary. Sun and Fun is extraordinary. Those events do things that Blakesburg cannot do and was never trying to do. But there is something that inevitably gets diluted at scale, at a gathering of several hundred thousand people. The intimacy of a real conversation, the connection that happens when two pilots stand next to two airplanes and have the actual time to talk at length, that gets harder to find. There are too many people. There is too much to see. The moments that form the foundation of this community get compressed by the noise and the crowd and the schedule.
At Blakesburg, by the end of the first full day, you will have spoken to a significant portion of everyone on the field, not necessarily by name, but by airplane, which out here amounts to the same thing. You will remember the Porterfield from Nebraska, the Howard from Ohio, the Luscombe from Pennsylvania. You will see those pilots at the potluck, and at the museum, and at the morning line check, and by Sunday it will feel like a community you have been part of longer than the event has been running. That feeling is not accidental. It is the product of a field that does not scale, and a community that never asked it to. If you are planning to make the trip, here is what you need. Iowa 2-7 is a grass strip. Pull out your performance charts and be honest with yourself. If you have never landed on grass, get some dual instruction before you come, because the first time should not be in front of people who will watch your entire final approach from folding chairs. The field can soften after rain, so monitor the weather in the 72 hours before departure. Check for current pyreps from pilots who made the trip ahead of you. Fuel planning matters. The field does not have self-serve on site, so know your numbers going in and coming out. Centerville Regional Airport is the closest option, about 10 miles to the southeast. Ottumwa Regional is roughly 20 miles to the north. Either will take care of you. Camping fees are very reasonable. The tie-down spots put you right next to your aircraft. Bring real stakes, because southern Iowa does get wind, and you do not want to explain to your neighbors why your tent is now across the aisle from your airplane. The annual fly-in runs in late August. If you're hearing this and thinking, maybe this year, let me give you a little push. Yes, this year, make the calls. Check the dates on the Antique Airplane Association website. Block the calendar. Do the performance numbers. Get your oil changed if it is getting close, and then go.
The Antique Airplane Association and the Air Power Museum at Antique Airfield are your primary sources for current event information, dates, and camping logistics. Search them out. The Iowa aviation community is also a terrific resource for field conditions and recent pyreps as the event approaches. You can find us at radiohanger.com. I'm Ramp. Go land on the grass.